This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. I've got so many little snippets that I'd like to talk about, but I feel compelled to start with a story that happened yesterday in a very, very auspicious ceremony that took place in the Israeli Air Force when Lieutenant Colonel B officially was appointed as a squadron commander of a UAV squadron, a drone unit in the Israeli Air Force, taking over from Lieutenant Colonel T, who was stepping down after 3 years. Now, why was that such a groundbreaking moment? Because Lieutenant Colonel B is the first female commander of a drone unit in the Israeli Air Force. And this shows how women are becoming more and more accepted in all roles that are available in the Israeli Army, the Israeli Air Force. And it kind of comes on the back of another historical moment which flew under the radar, and you'll pardon my pun, because that took place in June during the 12-day war, when for the first time in history, a female pilot and a female navigator were paired together in an Israeli Air Force fighter jet that carried out attacks against Iran. Now, it wasn't done on purpose. There wasn't some logic pairing these two together. That's just how it fell out. That's how the two were put together. They happened both to be females, and they were paired together on this mission that went to Iran. And we have to mention Alice Miller's name. Alice Miller, a former South African, immigrated to Israel at the age of 6 from South Africa and sued the IDF to have the right to be accepted to pilot training course. And even though Alice ultimately didn't become an Air Force pilot, she did break open the gates, and she did get the courts to force the Air Force to accept females to pilot training course. And today we are really reaping the benefits of the fantastic, groundbreaking effort that Alice made all those years ago. And today we're seeing our female pilots and, of course, squadron leaders now. Lieutenant Colonel B, the first squadron leader of a drone unit. And, of course, I don't have to tell the listeners that drones are becoming so much more part of our everyday activities, of our battle, of the wars that we've been fighting, of our security establishment. UAVs or drones, as we like to call them, are really one of the most incredible developments in modern warfare. We've seen also how Russia has been using their drones, Iranian drones, with devastating impact in Ukraine, and how effective our drones were when they were deployed in Iran at the start of the 12-day war, and indeed during the course of it. So a great story. I can't not mention the whole New York Times disaster, and I'm sure that you've had a chance to talk about it, and the listeners have had their say about the New York Times showing this child depicting starvation in Gaza, and then it goes on to apologize for the fact that this child apparently had illnesses which hadn't been originally indicated in the first article. And it turns out that this child was somebody who Israel had airlifted to Italy in order to allow the child to receive treatment for the condition that the child was suffering. And the pictures were then blasted across the world depicting starvation in Gaza. Now, someone said that If it was an inadvertent error and these things happen from time to time and we need to be forgiving, then we would have to say that these inadvertent errors should potentially go both ways. If you make a genuine error, sometimes it'll go in this direction and sometimes it will go in that direction. And yet, these inadvertent errors, and I use that word somewhat cautiously, always seem to go in one direction. I think you're getting what I mean, right?
Absolutely.
So one last little snippet which just caught my attention was this comment by the Netherlands government. They've actually put Israel onto the list of countries that present a national security threat to the Netherlands. And that was a very fascinating move.
Fascinating. I was wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean, because that puts Israel on a list with like Russia and Iran and Turkey and countries like that. That's the kind of group that we're now being forced into. And of course, what's going on in the Netherlands is a very fascinating thing. But according to what they've written about why Israel poses a threat, it's apparently because of the fact that Israel is attempting to influence political and public opinion abroad, including in the Netherlands. That is the national security threat that Israel presents to the Netherlands. I will leave you to draw your own conclusions about that.
Absolutely. Let's talk about US negotiator Steve Witkoff on his way to Israel. Israel's threatened to annex part of Gaza. Where are we? What is next?
Well, when we heard yesterday that Steve Witkoff was on his way to Israel, then there was kind of a moment where people said, well, maybe this means something. Maybe we should begin to get our hopes up again that potentially a hostage release might well be on the cards. We did see that Israel had rejected Hamas's proposal that some dead bodies would be released of Israeli hostages in return for live terrorists to be released from Israeli prisons. Israel said no to that. And in the background, we have a lot of talk about annexing Gaza, or at least annexing bits of Gaza. So let's try and put a little bit of logic or a little bit of explanation. I don't know if there's any logic to it, but just to try and understand some of the background to the story. First of all, on the issue of the hostages, I did hear a very, very fascinating comment that was made that said that there was a proposal that our hostages should rather be labeled prisoners of war rather than hostages. And the question then arises as to what's the difference? Why would you call them prisoners of war rather than hostages when the significance sounds at least to be fairly similar? And the answer is that prisoners of war are things that you deal with when the war is over. Once the war is done and dusted, then you do these prisoners of war exchanges. And that's been typical of the way in which prisoners of war have been dealt with. While we still call them hostages, they remain a fundamental war objective. The war can't end until the hostage issue is resolved. And so the question is, what do you guys think about this little difference in declaration, the difference in the way in which those prisoners, hostages, call them what you wish, are being held in Gaza and how we should deal with them? Can we logically feel that we should end the war and then deal with the prisoners of war issue? Or should we remain in the situation? Should we retain the objective that the hostages are really one of our objectives of this war, rather than being willing to end the war and then sort that issue out? I am skeptical, very skeptical about whether it will be sorted out if we end the war. It seems to me that they wouldn't have any reason or incentive to
Leverage.
sort it out. They don't really seem to have much reason or incentive to sort it out now. So why wait until then? But that then leads us into the related discussion about the annexation. And fascinatingly, on some Telegram channels that I've seen, they have put out polls as to what the Israeli public think about the idea of annexing Gaza or annexing bits of Gaza. There was a proposal to annex some of the border areas of Gaza. What does the Israeli public think about that? And at least in these anecdotal polls, which really don't have any statistical significance, something like 70 to 80% of those who responded feel that Israel should annex parts of Gaza. So why is the Israeli government coming out with this threat that Israel will annex parts of Gaza? And the answer is that they potentially need to create a reason for Hamas to be willing to compromise. And if you threaten that we will annex Gaza and then might be willing to give up on that threat in exchange for receiving hostages or something like that, it potentially just creates a bargaining tool that Israel may be willing to give up on in the future in exchange for something that we're looking for. Because right now, it feels like Hamas has nothing to compromise for. They've got no reason to want to end the war. They have no reason to want to release the hostages. And so I just wonder whether the strategy isn't to somehow threaten that we will annex Gaza, annex parts of Gaza, and then be willing potentially to give up on that threat. That's just my theory. I am fundamentally opposed to the idea of annexing Gaza or annexing parts of Gaza, because we certainly don't want to take any responsibility for the people who live there, because annexation implies some sort of a civil responsibility towards the people who live there. And I think that we have enough on our plate to deal with without having to take civil responsibility for the people who live in Gaza. I can see why the threat of an annexation might have a logic to it.
It might also be a response to the way in which the world, the UK in particular, is looking to hand Hamas a perceived victory around the recognition of a Palestinian state, and Israel saying, well, not so fast, Hamas, because we're going to show you that you can lose Gaza because of your actions, not necessarily gain a Palestinian state. It might be around that, but I guess we will see how this plays out. Israeli and Syrian government ministers are due to meet today in Baku. What's on the agenda for this meeting?
This is a very interesting meeting, and not the first one that has taken place, albeit somewhat under the radar. Now, Israel's Strategic Affairs Minister Ron Dermer is the person who has been nominated by the Israeli government to deal with our new expanding relations with Syria. Let's not forget that Syria remains today still an enemy country. We have no diplomatic relations with Syria, even though things have changed quite a lot since the new government has taken over in Syria. But we also still have a lot of issues. There is certainly not friendliness. There isn't a feeling of welcoming about what's going on in Syria, particularly when you consider that the new Syrian president, al-Julani, is, of course, someone who's been very, very closely associated with ISIS and al-Qaeda and, you know, terror organizations like that. And he is somewhat being laundered now in the international community as being someone who might be able to take over and lead Syria. There aren't too many other options, by the way. Nobody else seems to be standing up to want to challenge his position. And the fact that Assad is out of the picture now is potentially helpful. And so here we have an opportunity for Israel to potentially create a relationship with Syria. And that's really what these meetings are all about. This one in Baku that's going to be taking place in Azerbaijan later today. So I think that this is definitely interesting. And of course, the Trump administration likes to talk about the Abraham Accords and how countries are lining up in their droves to join the Abraham Accords. I'm not sure that there are so many countries, but certainly there are potential candidates, Syria being one of them with the new regime. So I think that this is interesting. Obviously, the recent little conflict that we've had with Syria over the issue of the Druze has not been helpful in trying to promote all of this, but we will certainly see what comes out of Baku today. I think it's a very interesting development, one that takes place very, very quietly and under the radar because of all of the other events that are going on that attract the headlines. But this in itself, I think, should be a headline And it's really not, hardly. And I suppose that leads us into talking a little bit about Tisha B'Av that will take place on Sunday, the only other fast day in the year, 25-hour fast day besides Yom Kippur. And our relationship with Tisha B'Av is a very strange one. Of course, Tisha B'Av is considered to be one of the most disastrous days in Jewish history, the one which has the worst luck associated with it. The concept of Tisha B'Av seems to infiltrate in our everyday activities. There is this myth about the jellyfish that come to the Israeli coast each year around this time, and the myth says that they stay around the coastline of Israel until Tisha B'Av, and then after Tisha B'Av, suddenly the jellyfish somehow know that we've had our fast and we've gone on our way, and they somehow vacate the coastline to allow people to swim more freely. Those who believe that, well, you know what, you know where you are. But also there is this saying in Hebrew, when someone has a particularly sour face, that they have what they call a parzuf shel Tisha B'Av. They have a face that resembles Tisha B'Av because of the sadness that's associated with Tisha B'Av. Of course, it commemorates the destruction of both temples and many, many other disasters that have befallen us. And during this period, we feel a certain closer connection to Tisha B'Av because of the sadness and because of the disaster that we have had over the last 2 years. And all I can say in trying to be a little bit encouraging as we head into this period is that there is this idea and the belief that in the after the Messiah, that Tisha B'Av will become a day of rejoicing and of happiness. And so as we have our fast on Sunday, and I hope it is meaningful for everybody, let's think about the possibility that one day Tisha B'Av will be this great day that we will be able to be happy, that we'll be able to rejoice and celebrate on Tisha B'Av. Shiavoy Elenu Bekarov, that it should come to us very soon.
Absolutely, Anthony Rock, thank you as always. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, a meaningful fast, and we'll catch you on Monday morning with the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.